Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Republicans' frantic search for ways to pay for tax cuts as last-minute holdouts like Senator Rubio demand concessions in the tax bill that is expected to be finalized on Friday and voted on next week. Edward Kleinbart, a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law, who was the chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, whose latest book is We Are Better Than This, How Government Should Spend Our Money, joins us. We'll discuss how the Republicans are rushing the bill through without independent scoring and any consultation with Democrats to get it passed and on Trump's desk before the new Democratic Senator Doug Jones is sworn in. And even then, with Senator Corker remaining a no vote and Senators McCain and Cochran hospitalized due to the Republicans' narrow majority in the Senate, Vice President Pence, who would break a tie vote, has had to delay an overseas trip, indicating the vote in the Senate is on shaky ground. Then we'll examine the blow to internet freedom resulting from the 3-2 vote today by the FCC to overturn net neutrality in a victory for a few corporate monopolies at the expense of broad democratic opposition from consumers who will soon find that their internet will be like their cable TV service, a poverty of choice in a rigged market where Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T foist their content on you while slowing down or blocking the content you want. David Carroll, a professor of media design at the New School, where he explores the intersection between media design, culture, policy, and journalism, joins us to discuss how Rupert Murdoch is likely to use the $52 billion from the sale of his entertainment assets to Disney to boost Fox News and expand the number of local TV stations Fox has. Then finally, we'll look further into the killing of net neutrality by the FCC chair and explore Ajit Pai's ties to movement conservatives following his appearance in a video produced by the Daily Caller that mocks supporters of net neutrality and features Pai dancing with the producer with the Daily Caller who promoted the Pizzagate conspiracy. Victor Picard, a professor at the Annenberg School of Communication at the University of Pennsylvania and author of America's Battle for Media Democracy, The Triumph of Corporate Libertarianism and the Future of Media Reform, joins us to discuss whether a corporate hireling will get away with thwarting the will of the people. And joining us now is Edward Kleinbart, a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. He served as chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, and his latest book is We Are Better Than This, How Government Should Spend Our Money. And he has an op-ed at The Hill, Senators Picked Americans' Pockets Via Degraded Tax Policy Process. Welcome to Background Briefing, Edward Kleinbart.
Ian, thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, thanks for joining us, Ed. And this is a pretty down-to-the-wire, I would think, at this last minute, since they're hoping to get the two House and Senate bills finally merged tomorrow, Friday, where you've got Senator Rubio now wanting to expand child tax credits, along with Mike Lee of Utah. Obviously, they've got leverage. It may strike some as extortion, but its purpose actually is quite virtuous. But then you've also got Senator Ron Johnson saying, we're literally trying to squeeze about $2 trillion in tax reform into a $1.5 trillion box, and that's been a problem. Is that it in a nutshell?
Well, yes, that really is it in a nutshell. The bill is a very large, a permanent tax cut for corporations, for businesses conducted in so-called pass-through form, like partnerships and limited liability companies, and for very, very wealthy individuals who have the good fortune to die with multi-million dollar estates. Those are very expensive propositions and need to be paid for. And in order to come within the Congress's own rules for this particular bill, that they will squander no more than $1.5 trillion in this legislation. And so they've got a lot of squeezing to do. Obviously, one of the principal ways they've done that so far is by terminating all of the individual tax cuts that, in fact, help the middle class to some extent. Those all expire, And at the same time, the tax brackets in which people's income falls, so the tax rates they pay, creeps up more quickly than current law. So the result is when those expire, people will be paying more tax than they are today.
Well, there's even talk of having these tax cuts for individuals expiring even sooner than the 2025 date. And of course, the tax cuts for corporations and for the highest earners, they've both been reduced, corporate tax from 35 to 21 now, and then the top bracket for the 1%, if you will, is what, 39.5 down to 37, is that right?
Yeah, 39.6 down to 37, but I don't treat any number as final at this point. They have a hard ceiling of the $1.5 trillion, and there's going to be horse trading going, I believe, well into the night on Friday to hit that. The nonpartisan staff, the Joint Committee on Taxation, where I used to work, are the people whose job it is to score all of these moving pieces and tell Congress whether they've gone over their self-imposed ceiling or not. That's an iterative process, and every change takes the JCT staff, you know, some time to run through their computer models. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be an early day on Friday for the Congress of the United States. There are some of these moving parts we ought to keep an eye on. One is this idea of shortening still further the time frame in which individuals would get a tax cut while leaving this creep in the tax rate brackets in place. You know, that just confirms in a conspicuous way what Mark Meadows, of all people, said very clearly last week, which is...
Right, he's the Tea Party guy, right?
Yes, yes. He's the sort of the head of the Tea Party and the Freedom Caucus, it's now called. It's graduated to being the Freedom Caucus. He said, look, this is a giant corporate tax cut that we are marketing as a middle-class tax cut. Very candid statement that's basically correct. And so if they were so foolish as to cut back the individual tax cuts in the terms of the number of years to which they apply, it just confirms that that statement as the right way to understand the legislation. I do think that there is a significant possibility that the 21% corporate rate will suddenly creep up to 22%. I mean, that's if you're a Mitch McConnell, what you want to do is you've already had the president signal that he would be thrilled with that. You want to do that late Friday night and say, I tried my best, but the numbers just don't work. We have to do this to get this passed. What are you going to do about it, corporations? You're still so much better off than you are under current law that you would have a hell of a lot of gall to complain about this this result. So it would not surprise me if that happened late Friday.
And again, I'm speaking with Edward Kleinbard, who's a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. He served as chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, and his latest book is We Are Better Than This, How Government Should Spend Our Money. And he has an op-ed at The Hill, Senators Picked Americans' Pocket via Degraded Tax Policy Process. But it's pretty clear that this is a bill for the donors, and the problem the Republicans have is they've got to sell what the giveaway to the donors to their voters and con their voters into believing that this is a middle-class tax cut. And as they make more and more compromises in the last minutes, except for the compromise with Rubio, which is actually to help children, by and large, what is your feeling that they're going to screw the middle class further?
No, I don't, except for shortening the time frame, which
right.
obviously is
right.
screwing. I don't think there'll be new provisions aimed at taking more away. They've already added back the alternative minimum tax for individuals, mm-hmm. which undercuts people who are in business, who are claiming lots of what's called accelerated depreciation deductions, that is, claiming deductions for the wear and tear on business investments at very accelerated rates relative to economic actual wear and tear. So there are places where they can tweak some dials there, for example, because they put back the individual AMT, not the corporate. They could lower the income level at which the AMT, the new AMT for individuals would apply. That raises revenue. But beyond that and shortening the time frame, I don't think they have a lot of knobs or dials to turn on the individual side to raise a lot of revenue.
Well, obviously they want to get this thing done before the Democratic Senator Doug Jones, who was just elected from Alabama, the president wants this signed by Christmas. Yes. Senator Cork is still a no vote. And as I mentioned, Senator McCain and Cochran are both hospitalized. We don't know the extent to which Senator McCain, he obviously has a serious brain cancer. And we just learned that Vice President Pence, who would break the tie vote, has delayed an overseas trip. So I guess there's an imperative to pass it because the Republicans just simply can't look as if they can't get anything done. On the other hand, this is not a done deal. So do you think that this is, at the end of the day, in spite of this last-minute extortion, if you will, they're going to pass this thing? It sounds like they don't have enough votes. And I don't, if you can only afford to lose two, you've already lost one with Corker. And then you've got McCain and Cochran hospitalized.
Right. You can afford to lose a total of three.
Three. I see. Okay.
Because of the tie vote goes to the vice president. Yeah. But I do think it happens. I think it will happen by a whisker. What Senator Rubio is doing is actually good for the lowest income Americans. A stop clock that's right twice a day, just because he's a Republican doesn't mean that every idea he has is necessarily bad. Mm-hmm. This is actually a desirable, from the point of view of the country, a desirable point that he's trying to force.
Let's go through what's still in it, though. Sure. For example, here in this blue state of California, we're being punished politically, it would seem, losing the ability to deduct state and local taxes. And also, it's pretty galling that Chairman Brady of the House Ways and Means Committee, who's from Houston, has made sure that victims of the hurricanes in Florida and in Texas get to deduct their losses, but victims of fires in California don't. So there seems to be a double standard at play here.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. In the end, the deal is $10,000 of state and local tax deductions, whether property tax or income tax or both. $10,000, unfortunately, does not go a long way in California or New York for the sum of property tax and income taxes. And it is really, quite unfair if what you're trying to do is come up with national legislation that is fair to all income groups all across the country. It is a troubling provision to have added, but that's going to be the deal, $10,000 of total state and local.
Well, what about I can't understand why we're not investing in students as opposed to making them centers of profit. The students used to be able to deduct student loans. They can't do that anymore. And there's this horrible provision in the House bill. The PhD students have to quadruple their taxes. Is that still in there?
My understanding is that drops out. My understanding is that the Senate has prevailed on that point. But it was such a conspicuously bad idea that it's really quite difficult to understand what went through people's heads. It's very simple. Take a big step back. There are only two ways that factors that go into our national income. One is labor, our own personal effort, and the other is the capital that creates the machines and the intangible assets that individuals put to work. Well, two-thirds of our income comes from labor. So what you really want is to change the growth path of the U.S. economy, to just bump us up to a higher growth path. Well, then the logical thing to say is, how can we make the biggest asset class in the United States more productive? And that asset class is human beings themselves and their labor. So where we should be going is doing everything we can to lower the cost of higher education, not to raise it, and to create more opportunities for bright kids of limited means. That's how you address long-term inequality. That's how you address the stagnation through which lower-income Americans find it harder and harder to change their lives from one generation to the next. That's how you put the United States on a higher growth path, and yet that idea is completely foreign to the current Congress, and I think we know the reason, which is that the current Congress views the university in general as its enemy. They view it as a hotbed of liberal democratic ideas, rather than viewing the university as one of the great achievements of the United States. To have public universities of the quality that we do in California is really one of the great accomplishments of this country. And that's exactly right, Ian, that's where we ought to be investing.
Well, just in the last minute then, Ed, some analysts say that there'll be a temporary bump. There'll be a feel-good temporarily, and then the bad stuff's going to happen later. And not before long, people will be actually realizing how much this thing's going to hurt them. Is that your understanding that, how long before people recognize that this is a bad deal?
First, it's not at all clear that people will necessarily recognize it's a good deal, because it doesn't translate into your take-home pay immediately. You've got to change your withholding for 2018. That's itself a process that employers have to initiate. It's going to take months to get done. Then you have to remember that the income tax for people making, say, under $75,000 or even $100,000 a year, the biggest tax they pay is the payroll tax, and that's not changing. So we're changing one component of the tax system, not every component. And finally, what's going to happen is that, and we've already heard this from some early sort of gun jumpers like Paul Ryan himself, that as soon as the ink is dry on this, they're going to move to start cutting back benefits, because what choice do they have? Our deficits have increased. Well, they just increased our deficits, and so what that will then be used as a tourniquet to reduce government spending and investment, and that spending and investment hits lower-income Americans and the middle class hardest. So this is really a very pernicious piece of legislation when you remember not just how the tax benefits are being distributed, but what will happen by way of turning that tourniquet to insist that spending must now be cut because, geez, what do you know? All of a sudden there are deficits.
Well, Edward Kleinbaum, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Edward Kleinbaum, who's a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. He served as the chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, and his latest book is We Are Better Than This, How Government Should Spend Our Money. And he has an op-ed at The Hill, Senators Picked America's Pockets Via Degraded Tax Policy Process. We're going to take a brief station break and back examining the blow to internet freedom resulting from the 3-2 vote today by the FCC to overturn net neutrality.